When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Through the Griffin Tour is back, and this time we are heading to the West Coast. Join Jay and I as we record brand new episodes of the show live in person with you guys, plus a special in-person Jay versus Ben with questions asked by... This September, we will be heading to Seattle, Portland, Sacramento, Berkeley, San Diego, and Los Angeles. Seattle and San Diego were both sold out, but we've just added matinee shows to both locations. So if you missed out on the first pass, or if you want to join us for a doubleheader, we will have two unique shows in the same day. For us, there is nothing more fun than getting to nerd out Harry Potter style with each and every one of you. And we will also have exclusive Through the Gryffindor merch and a VIP meet and greet available for every show. We hope to see you all there. Ticket links can be found in the show notes or at supercarlinbrothers.com.
Sometimes I feel like there's a vulnerability involved with thumbnailingtons.
With thumbnailingtons.
Where it's like Isabella gets to see us go through our wandering, like, you know, it's like, what do you think you're going to talk about today? Mm-hmm. So that you were like, oh, I bet I could use like a curious.
Right,
thoughtful, right. And excited.
Yeah. It feels like there's always room for like a shocked face, always just a good smile face is always just like, you can't really go wrong with that. There's a good like disgusted in there. Sometimes I'm like, what haven't I done yet? I'm like, maybe I'll just throw that in there so it's there.
Say, know? What else can I do? Bring it in, bring it in. Bring it in, bring it in. And everybody, hello and welcome to Popcorn Culture. My name is Ben Carlin. I am your host. Here with me today is my brother Jay, who will be in every episode.
That's me.
Yeah, it is you. You're here. You're
wow.
Doing it. So, okay. So before every episode, we've talked about this before, but in case anybody's ever wondered, like on the YouTube channel, if you see like the thumbnails,
yeah,
there's always like these like big facial expressions that we're making. And it's kind of like, oh man, like it was good on somebody to go through and find that moment where they were like, oh, look, big thoughtful face or whatever. But the peek behind the curtain is that before we record every episode, we do thumbnailing tins.
We do thumbnailing tins,
as we call it. So we move the microphones aside and we all like make facial expressions at the camera and try to find something that like ultimately reflects the kind of conversation
right.
We had in each week's episode. But there's a weird thing, like, and I have no idea. And I'm curious if this happens to you when it comes to like your facial expressions, because we had an instance in office, I think it was last week or maybe 2 weeks ago, where I was recording a video on the Super Carlin Brothers set. And in like what was happening in real time was a major, major storm overhead.
Like outside. Yeah.
Yes. And so what like came to pass was there was a blip in the electricity, and the only thing that went off in our entire office was the edit bay that Ethan, the editor, was working at, where he was like mid like edit on like a timely video that needed to go out, and content was lost. And so like I'm sitting there recording, and all of a sudden all I hear is just like a bang, you know, from the other room, which is just the extremely understandable
frustration from Ethan. Yeah,
that was just sort of like we were on a time crunch. He was going as hard as he possibly could, and you know, I think it ended up not being as bad as we thought it was going to be, but in the moment it was like we just lost progress, and like we didn't have the time to lose that progress. But the point is that what it caught from me was a very genuine look of like shock.
Yeah.
That then was just recorded on camera.
Yeah.
All good?
And so unlike the thumbnailing tins where, you know, you're trying to like make a face or whatever, this was like me getting to see in the footage what I look like when I am shocked or like,
right.
Or like suddenly like jolted.
Yeah.
And I was like, goodness, the level of, I was like, is that how intense I look? Like, is that what people expect? Like, when you're just standing in the room and something happens and you can see my face, is that what you see?
Right.
So I don't know. Do you ever have this? Like, it's not uncommon for our editors here to do, they call it the J face of the day or the Ben yeah. face of the day, which is like, you know, it could be in between takes while we're filming something. It could just be a pause screen where like our face is like looking awfully hilarious. And they oftentimes share it with us and it's kind of like, wow, I can't believe my face is capable of making.
Yeah. Right. Like, when shape. Do I ever look like that? Come yeah. on now. Geez.
Right, right. Right. Yes. Yes. But our faces are being recorded quite often.
Quite often. So many of our facial expressions are captured.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, like, whenever I see the freeze frames, I am always like, man, it's such a weird, like, I remember that from when I used to edit the videos and it's just like nonstop because you're constantly like pausing the video to go do the next thing. And it's just like, do I ever look normal? Like I understand if sometimes I catch myself in a weird freeze frame, but it shouldn't be like 90% of the time.
No, right? I feel like you're better at it than me. Like even the office consensus is that you have a more pausable face.
A more pausable face?
A more pausable face.
Meaning
yeah.
like
yeah.
what, that I like hold an expression more?
Maybe hold an expression more. Maybe like the in-betweens. Like I feel like a lot of times I look like the meme of the guy that's like aliens, you know,
right. like the tinfoil hat guy.
The tinfoil yeah. hat guy, yeah, yeah. Like, that's like my go-to boss face. I don't know. It's weird, but I've also always sort of had this feeling about myself. I mean, everybody talks about like when they hear their voice in recording.
Yeah,
it takes a long time to get used to. Like, is that what my voice sounds like?
Yeah,
you know. But I've oftentimes even felt this way about myself, like in photos and stuff, where I'm like, I think I am a non-photogenic human being.
No,
like
nonsense, absolute nonsense. It's like you only notice it about yourself, but like I'll look like group pictures or whatever, and I'll always be like, why am I the only one who looks so dumb? Like, everyone else is such a good pose, and there I am hunched over like an idiot off in the corner, or like, oh yep, I leaned the wrong way. I hate the whenever people are like, let's do a table selfie, like oh, and everyone yeah. has to like look down and lean in. Like, my body's not good is not good at being captured in this position.
Yeah,
like
yeah, yeah.
wherever it is, I'm either like because you have to like stretch your neck out to like a weird angle. It's like, I got a long neck and it looks weird and it just like flows too weirdly into my face, and I never like it at all. And or a lot of times people ask me to take it because I've got like long arms or whatever.
Oh yeah.
So then I'm the person at the front, so I'm kind of like off in the corner and my face is like extra big because I'm closest to the camera. I'm just like, I like, they're fun pictures, but like I don't ever like them. Like,
yeah.
I think about it so much. Like, how can I adjust my, like, what do I need to do? Should I like try and face my shoulders more? Like, don't stretch your neck, like look down a little. I used to do that a lot. I would like, whenever I would do these, I'd be like looking up because I'm like trying to look at the camera or something. And I realized that I was like, look down. It's okay. This is how your face looks.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Like, eyes up, chin down. Yeah, like, and I've never quite been able to master it. I'm like, maybe better than I used to be, but
I think this is probably just something like where it's like you're always going to be more inclined to pick apart your own appearance because
yeah.
you're like you're just so dialed into your like how you look in any given photo.
Yeah.
Cuz I tend to feel the same way, like where I will have such a hate relationship with those photos like the moment it's taken. But then Alice and I are like, you know, one of our evening things that I feel like we so frequently like find ourselves doing is just basically like instead of scrolling, you know, like socials or whatever, like one of us will just like open our camera roll and go back to,
yeah,
you know, like June 2022 when we're looking at photos from like that family trip we took or whatever. And it's
yeah.
like, when I see it then, I'm like, oh, I feel like I remember hating this photo when I took it. But mm-hmm. now looking back on it, like, I'm like, that was a great photo. What a good memory.
Don't we look so good?
I'm glad we captured right. that lunch. Mm,
that lunch.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, I look weird in this table selfie. Yeah.
Like, even after time.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
I still see. The other thing I love doing is jumping photos.
Oh, where, yes.
Like, you
yes.
know, like you're both in the air or whatever. And it like looks really fun. However. my big self complaint is that whenever I do this, my shirt will come up and like my stomach will be revealed and it will always look bad. Like, because you're like in the air and there's like a certain amount of like gravity just sort of like moving your body around.
Yeah. There's nothing attractive about zero G tummy.
Exactly. Exactly. Ben, there's nothing attractive about zero G tummy. And like, I've been in so many of these pictures specifically with you, and I don't know what kind of shirt magic you're pulling off. It never happens to you, and it always happens to me.
I have no idea.
My stomach will always be showing, and the rest of the picture will be amazing. We'll be like midair, we'll be in front of some fun background, and it's like we look so excited. And it's like, then I'm like, but there's this.
But there's
this. And then I look over at yours, and it's just like, nope, Ben's shirt doesn't gravity doesn't apply to Ben's shirt. It's always just perfectly around your waist, and it's not a problem.
you got to buy gravity.
I know.
Pro gravity shirts.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. Extra density or something.
I'm like, should I be like tucking my shirt in? And I'm like, that's a worse picture, almost certainly.
Yeah. So I don't know.
I don't know what to do about it.
For what it's worth, again, I think it's probably you.
It probably is.
Wait, what do you mean? It's probably it.
It's probably just me.
Oh, like you think you're zeroing in on something?
Yeah. I'm sure that everyone's not looking at it and being like, wow, Jay maybe hit the gym or something.
No, Jay does hit the gym.
Yeah,
Jay hits the gym plenty.
Right.
But I don't know. It's the photo thing. You have to be so critical of yourself. But the thing I do love about jumping photos is I always feel like you look like you're like 97 feet in the air.
Absolutely.
Like,
you do. Yeah.
I don't know how this happens because I mean, you and I are both springy people.
Yeah.
I would say.
Yeah.
Like I think we've got like okay ups.
I think we can jump like a little bit higher than your average person.
Right. Yes. We're in that like 71 percentile sweet spot.
Right.
Where
yeah.
it's like we don't jump high compared to people who jump high, but maybe we jump high compared to people who jump 50th percentile.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is most people.
Yeah. However, these photos I feel like are they're not Photoshopped at all. But I always like, I think when we were on tour, we did one of these on stage because we're doing like sound check or whatever. And we were like, oh, you guys look cool up there. Like, let's take some photos before everybody files in. And so we do like one of our jumping photos and somebody was filming the photo of the jumping photo. And I feel like the photo looks like you and I are like easily 48 inches off the ground.
Right.
And then the photo of the video of it, it's like maybe like jumped like 15 inches off the ground. And I'm like, I literally don't know what happened inside of the photo that makes it look like we are so high.
I think what happens is like when you do the jumping photo, you bring your legs and your feet very high up.
Maybe that's
like
part of it.
Your like butt more or less, there's not much you can do about that. Like, you know, if you and I are jumping, our butt is maybe coming 1 foot higher or something.
Right.
Maybe I don't know how high we jump, but for the sake of it, let's say your waist and your butt moves 1 foot off the ground worth of jumping, but which starts already at like three feet off the ground or whatever.
Oh, that's a good point.
But you bring your feet and your legs all the way up there,
right,
which makes it look like you jumped. You didn't actually jump 4 feet high. You jumped like 1 foot high, but because you lifted your legs and knees so high, it looks really impressive.
It's an illusion.
It's an illusion. Yes. Something like that.
Yes.
But then you see like Noah Lyles before he starts the 100 meter, and it does look like, boy, man, he just jumped like 7 feet off the ground. How do you do that?
Well, you know, he is the fastest man on the planet right now.
Have you seen that?
Maybe he just is jumping.
I know. Him and Tyreek Hill of the Kansas City Chiefs have apparently been having some beef about who would win in a race.
No way. Like, Tyreek Hill wants to go up against the...
Well, Noah Lyles is like, I'd love to train that guy. And Tyreek Hill was like, I'd beat Noah Lyles. And it was like, what?
Oh, dang. Like, okay.
The weird thing is that like... Tyreek Hill is probably most frequently measured at the 40 meter dash.
Sure.
Because that's like the football like marker or whatever.
Yep.
Whereas Noah Lyles obviously at like the 100 meter. And like, but he is known for having a specifically bad start. Even in the 100-meter dash, by the 40-meter mark, he was in last place. And then by 100 meters, he was winning.
Okay.
Obviously. So it's like, it would not surprise me if Tyreek Hill could beat him in a 40-meter dash, but I don't know about 100 meters.
Right. Yeah. It's that quick start. Like, it's off that
quick
line.
Start, yeah. But, man, dude, how great would it be if they actually have a race?
Oh, my gosh.
That'd be so fun.
Dude, it would be super fun if even, like, you know, because the world of, like imagine this. Yeah, like the world of, like, boxing, you know? Like,
yeah.
There's a lot of what's the term I'm looking for? Like showmanship, I believe, that is involved with the buildup to the fight, where it is not uncommon, especially in the modern era, for the combatants to be taking jabs at one another.
Yeah.
Like, publicly, to where it's basically just sort of like a diss track, you know. It's kind of like this guy's got nothing on me, they've got nothing on me, like I'm gonna say something about whatever, and
right,
then,
they better reserve a hospital bed for that guy,
or, right, yeah. yes and so it's like, to me, it's almost as if, like, there is no doubt about it that the boxers themselves are kind of like going into meetings being like, okay, so like what could be our latest dish, you know, like,
right,
like there, like, it's not personal, it's part of the show.
It's absolutely part of the show. Yeah, which, like, and like that for Noah Lyles is definitely part of his persona.
Yes.
It is like I was so interested watching this during the Olympics, because for so many of the different, like, disciplines, like for like the gymnastics, which was like what led off the Olympics, like they would talk to, I can't remember his name, the guy who was like from Alabama or something. He was like so stoic and so humble, and they kept harping on this like message from his dad that was like, you know, don't ever talk about how good you are, just go show them how good you are,
right,
you know, it'll
yes,
all come out in the wash or whatever,
right, yep,
yeah.
yep
and it was just like, yeah that's right, that's how you should be or whatever. And then you get to Noah Lyles and it's just like the complete opposite.
It's like, bring it.
Yeah, it's just like big talk all the time, I'm gonna win, I'm gonna make a huge show out of it. And it's just like, in the end, he did win. So,
right.
You know, he put his money where his mouth is. But it's like, it was so... But then they were talking about it, and they're like, no, like, why is it like this? Like, why would you look at, like, our gymnast guy and be like, that's how you should be, and then also look at Noah Lyles and be like, yes, this is okay.
Right.
One, because he has the skill to do it. But two, they were saying it's like, it is about... Like, because the 100 meters is, like, an extremely mental race... Like, it is like the act of having such a big ego and making such a big show out of everything is like a way to keep his confidence up, so that when he does it reminded me of the movie The Prestige, where like they're the two guys, Hugh Jackman and Christian Bale, like watching this old man do this crazy trick on stage, and like they show you how he do it, and he's like holding this like giant bowl of water between his legs, but then whenever he's in public he looks crippled, and which is why when you watch him on stage you're like, well, how on earth could he be doing it? And it's like, because at every moment he's not on stage he is performing for the world, so that when he's on stage you can't figure out how he did it,
right?
And it's like, it's like the same thing. It's like he is running that race, it's not just keeping his own confidence up, but it's like getting in the minds of his opponents. And it's like, ugh, every time he's out there being loud and flashy, like whether they believe him, whether they think he's just being an idiot, it doesn't mean they're not thinking about him.
Exactly.
And the more they think about him, whether they think they can beat him or not, they're like a little bit more worried. And then when he's on the starting block next to him, it's like, oh man, there he is, like,
yeah,
god,
like, yeah. this is like larger than life personality.
Right. Yeah. And it's like, as much as you don't want like intimidation to be a factor, and as much as you think you should be able to rise above it, sometimes you can't. And, you know, that is like why it is like part of his repertoire. It's like even when he's not racing, he's racing, you know?
Yes. And I mean, and there's a huge aspect in that regard of that's kind of like positive as far as like big egos go, because it's like what he's doing is kind of betting on himself, like,
right,
it's like going all in on me, and if I've talked this big talk and then lose, it's like, yeah, I'm gonna have to come back from that,
yeah,
like that's gonna be difficult. But it's also like, at this stage, this is the match, this is the race, you know, it's like it all boils down to the gold medal Olympics, like,
yeah,
that is the top, the epitome of the sport,
yeah,
the pinnacle of the sport. And so it's kind of like, yeah, go all in, now, because it's either going to work and bolster your confidence to make you, you know, like a potential future greatest of all time, or it doesn't work, but it's like, if not now, then when?
Right.
You know, it's like, this is the stage, you know, where it's like, if you're playing poker, it's come down to the last two people and you've got a great hand and you slide all your chips across the table. And it's like, I can't imagine I'm going to get a better hand than this.
Right.
So I like, now's the time. Now's when you go.
Now I'm all in.
And of course, obviously it's not just ego. It is skill. And that's another interesting one as well, because I think oftentimes when you think of ego, there is such disparity between what the facade is,
yeah,
and the skill to back it up. Like oftentimes egos are not backed by skill, and the disparity is kind of like the issue. But when it comes to an Olympic athlete, the ego that should match their ability, it's like, it stands to be rather extraordinary,
right?
Because they are extraordinary.
They are extraordinary.
You know?
Yeah. And it's like, I think they showed an interview between Noah and Usain Bolt, or just not even an interview, just like them talking.
Yeah.
And because like, it was like post Usain Bolt's like retirement, him talking to like Noah Lau, saying like, your energy, you got to keep it up. Like the sport needs this. Like that's what it wants. Like, because he was the same way.
Right.
You know, just like, but it was very much just like, yes, I'm the fastest. What are you going to do about it? Like,
his last name was Bolt.
His last name was Bolt. And his first name sounds like insane.
Yes.
You know, it just sounds like his name was like, they basically named him Insane Speed. And then he was.
Yeah. Yes. It's like he like manifested the name of what he was supposed to be.
Yeah. Like yeah. He was the name of Speed. And yeah, just yeah, that guy was unbelievable. It's like, I'm not sure anyone was going to. It's like, will we leave to see his record broken?
Oh, who knows?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Like, I think it's like one of those things where I don't want to dig too deep, because if his name is actually like Henry Smith, it would be like, oh. You know, like, can you imagine if it's like a stage name? Like
Usain Bolt. Oh,
yeah,
like, no, that can't be.
I'm not suggesting it is.
Yeah.
But could you imagine if it was like, oh, it's so perfect.
It's so perfect.
For exactly what you do.
Right.
Is it too perfect?
Yeah. Do you know what else I love about Noah Lyle, though, is that he would carry Exodia the Forbidden with him in his track singlet for races.
Okay, you're going to have to give way more information for carrying Exodia.
Exodia the Forbidden One. So if you don't know.
Jay, people don't know.
People don't know. Okay, so.
Ones of people got it.
Definitely not. More than ones. In the trading card game, Yu-Gi-Oh!, which certainly you've heard of.
Yeah, I mean, you heard of. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, there is in the very base set, there was a series of cards called Exodia the Forbidden One. And if you had all five pieces, it was five separate cards. The monster, it was like split into five cards. So you had the head, the left arm, the left leg, and the right leg. And if you managed to get all five cards in your hand at the same time, you could just turn your hand over and show your opponent and say, I win. That's the win condition. Is you get all five pieces of Exodia, you've assembled them, you win.
That's it.
Game over. Nothing they can do. That's it.
Yeah.
And so like in the very, very first episode of Yu-Gi-Oh, this is what the main character Yugi uses to defeat.
Yug.
Yeah. Yug. This is what he uses to defeat his eternal rival, Seto Kaiba, who has the three blue eyes, white dragons. And what's he going to do? Assemble Exodia. But he only ever gets to use it once, because then they get thrown in the water and yeah.
So
he never has it again. But
so Noah carries Exodia.
So yeah. So more or less, even today, even in modern Yu-Gi-Oh, you can still assemble Exodia and win instantly. It's not very good strategy. It's difficult to do. And there are they've made other ways to like use the cards to summon different versions of Exodia onto the field. Sure. None of which are the ultimate win condition that Exodia is. But since the beginning, it has been like the understood most powerful being in the Yu-Gi-Oh universe.
Okay.
So Noah Lyles carries Exodia the Forbidden with him while he runs, as if like he's untouchable. You know, he's that good. I've assembled all five pieces. I'm Exodia, you know.
See, so. I think with explanation that
it's so good.
It's amazing.
Yeah. And it also is just like, dude, I love that you know about Yu-Gi-Oh.
You know?
I love that you're also a little bit of a nerd.
I know. Yeah. There is something truly glorious when you discover I think just to give a couple other examples, you've got like Post Malone, I think, bought like from the Magic the Gathering, they released like the Lord of the Rings
yes.
set, and yep. he bought like there is one single one yeah. through
the ring.
The ring.
Yes.
And he bought it, I think, for over $1 million. And then I think
Post Malone also has a one of one Pokemon card of himself.
No way. It's
Post Malone V. Yes.
That is incredible.
Yes.
Nobody else should have it.
No one else should have it, but it's like, yeah, there's that, and there's a third one that is also another card that has been made just for him. That is like that he owns. So he owns 3 one-of-one cards from trading card games.
Yeah. Very unbelievable.
Yeah, it's so cool. Anyway, yeah,
like
ahead.
The day when it comes where Post Malone's net worth via pieces of cardboard he owns is worth more than his platinum records. it's like 60 years from now, and people are like, oh yes.
Yeah.
I don't know why we've gotten so aged.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, probably super valuable at some point.
Probably. I mean, I'm sure they're all very valuable. The one ring is going to be, that'll be valuable no matter what.
Yeah. Forever and ever. Yeah. And then who is the guy who played Superman? I feel like he is also
Henry Cavill. Yes. Yeah.
He is also, I think, like a big time nerd out there in the world.
I think it's Warhammer. Is that the game he plays?
Yes.
It's like miniatures, and he like makes them and paints them and does all the things.
Incredible.
Yeah, it's so
incredible.
Good. I love it.
Just not what you expect.
Yes.
But then it's like that makes it all the better.
Right. It's just like even him being, I think he's like the lead in Witcher too. And it's like it's because he like just like loves the video games.
Right.
You know?
That's why
I wanted to be it.
Absolutely.
Of course.
You look like you and have this personality. Amazing.
Yeah, I know.
Amazing.
It's just like, I know. Okay, awesome.
We'll take it.
So yeah, I love it. When there's like huge celebrities you wouldn't expect to be like kind of nerdy in this fun way.
Yes, exactly. But so, okay, so right there we might be able to take a transition.
Oh. Transition.
Popcorn Culture is sponsored by Shopify. Boy, howdy, where to begin? I remember graduating college and having aspirations of becoming an entrepreneur. I was brimming with ideas. A kitchen tool that made spiral cut hot dogs, or a phone case that uses a special retractable cables to wrap around any surface for selfies. I had no idea how to make these ideas a reality, and spoilers, I still don't. However, what I have learned through my various other endeavors is how to take products and make them available for purchases online, thanks to Shopify. Shopify is an e-commerce platform that makes designing your webpage, setting up your store, and making your first sales a breeze. But the best part is that after that first sale, Shopify scales with your growth, meaning it's perfect whether you're selling tens, hundreds, or even thousands of products monthly. And I am a data person, and boy, does Shopify have data. Want to know how many hot dog spiralizers you sold between May 29th and July 5th? That's peak hot dog season. Boom, data in no time. Also, the answer is zero. I still don't know how to make a hot dog spiralizer, but if I did, I would know exactly how to sell them. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout we use with Shopify. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/poppop. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/poppop to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/poppop. Popcorn Culture is sponsored by Feather Snap. Y'all, I have officially reached the age where when it rains, I stand on my porch with my coffee mug in hand and declare, we really needed this. And with that, Alice and I have also taken to not only watching the many birds of our backyard, but also work to learn their specific bird calls. I kid you not, this very morning, Alice called me out to our porch to let me know, and I quote, "Aw, the morning doves are back." Which is why I'm so excited to tell you about the Feather Snap Scout Bird Feeder, which comes equipped with a top-of-the-line camera so you can grab images of all of your bird feeder customers and identify them thanks to expert-trained AI. It's so easy to set up and easy to use with built-in solar panels that means less recharging and more bird watching. The feeder pairs with a Feather Snap app that lets you organize your favorite pictures, and you can learn fun facts about hundreds of species and even earn badges for IDing new birds. Seriously, it is so fun, so be sure to check them out today at feathersnapcam.com. That's feathersnapcam.com. Popcorn Culture is sponsored by Fiji Water. Y'all, I have been having one heck of an amazing summer. Lake days on the boat have been some of the best of my life, and on those hot days, I love to keep Fiji Water on hand to keep my family and myself hydrated and refreshed. It really is from the islands of Fiji. Drop by drop, Fiji Water collects in a sustainable ancient artesian aquifer 1,600 miles away from the nearest continent, protected and preserved naturally from external elements. And as the
water filters through volcanic rock, it collects a unique profile of electrolytes and minerals, resulting in more than double the electrolytes as the other two top premium bottled water brands, giving Fiji Water its soft, smooth taste. And unlike some other premium bottled waters, Fiji Water's electrolytes are 100% naturally occurring, and this water even has a perfectly balanced pH of 7.7, and because I'm a complete aquarium nerd, I tested this with some of my pH test kits and can tell you, confirmed. Fiji Water really is Earth's finest water, so get stocked up on Fiji Water this summer and visit your local retailer to pick some up for your next backyard party, beach or pool day, hike, or even your home office. It's not just water, it's Fiji Water. Okay, Jay, I'm going to try. I'm going to do my darned best here.
Do your darned best.
Okay. So I have like a lengthy note.
I noticed in here, I didn't even read it all. I was like, Ben's just going to have to explain it to me.
Yeah. So me and Alice and I are, where to start?
Where to begin?
It's like, I'm afraid to lead with the phrase joining a cult.
Oh God.
No, we're not joining a cult, but like, it's like, I feel like whenever I almost need to start with a very extreme version of what I'm about to say, because I feel like then it softens the blow when I finally start using the words that are involved.
Okay.
Alice recently, she just like me, you know, we both go through like our therapeutic journeys out there in the world, mental health, all that type of stuff. Alice recently delved into hypnosis.
Oh boy.
Where she had found like a local person and she was like, should I try this? Like, I think it would be like really interesting. And I was like, personally, I was just like on the edge of my seat. I was like, I just want to know what happened.
I just want to know what happened.
Like, were you hypnotized? Like, did it work?
Well, so I would imagine like therapeutic hypnosis is not like stage show hypnotism.
Correct. Yeah. Like, it's the goal is not like, you know, to go and cluck like a chicken or perform, you know, acts of gymnastics or something like that. It's more like attempting to sort of put your brain in such a space that you're able to like maybe take out like, you know, traumatic pieces or something like that. You know, the sharp pointy ones that you don't want to access for some other reason and then humanize them by handling them.
Yeah.
I think is going to be my layman's Ben's interpretation of what was supposed to happen.
I think, you can do that. And then in high school, in psychology, once upon a time, they had a hypnotist come. And I guess people could go and like watch or whatever, but it would have been really boring to watch. But if you were in the psychology class, you could like volunteer to be one of the people. And I did. And I was.
Did you think you were hypnotized?
I think it achieved what they were trying to achieve.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't think they could have like suggested me to like do stuff.
Okay. Okay.
But it wasn't like that. It was very much like, it was like a guided, almost more like a guided meditation or like a guided hypnosis. But it was like, basically what they asked me to do was like find, well, they had like an easel with like a little dot on it or something.
Okay.
And they were like, you know, focus on the dot and just sort of like, just that was like your focal point for everyone doing it. And you just like stared at it and tried not to blink. And they were like, kind of like, it was like very guided, which helped a lot.
Yes.
I felt like, but the idea was to like not move your eyes at all. Stay on the dot. As long as I'm talking, think about this. Don't take your eyes from the dot. Focus on your breathing. Look at the dot or whatever.
Yeah.
You know,
well, go ahead. Yeah.
And it was really weird. I think, but like it got to the point where like everything became like black and white, like weirdly, like nothing, like everything like faded out, like all the background, and like there was a bunch of people like in like behind the easel, so everything became like black and white in my vision, which was really weird.
Okay.
But then like at the same rate, then I remember like at one point someone like sneezed or something, and when they did that, they're like, you know, brought their arm up and like their like shirt sleeve was like red, and it was like the most vibrant red I'd ever seen.
No way.
Yeah, it was like everything, like any movement at all was like insane colors. And that is mostly what I remember from it. This was like everything kind of going black and white and then the colors. And I guess they were saying that this was like, you know, the guy doing it can like, you know, do it to himself. and they can basically just like, you know, he said he had like a knot on the wall in his office and he would just like stare at it and he could like, you know, do it and he could basically work in like a 2 hour nap inside of like 15 minutes basically by doing this and
interesting
stuff.
Okay,
so anyway, that's my lone experience with hypnosis,
which I have to imagine is more than many people have experienced.
Yeah.
And the guided meditation aspect of it, I actually think makes a lot of sense. Like I've just personally used like the Calm app before, where they'll do like a little guided meditation. You put your headphones in and you like lay on like a floor or whatever, or sit in like a comfy chair. And oftentimes like it's the coaxing, you know, it's like, it's just kind of giving you like little prompts that like sort of like work you. It's almost like navigating you through like a dark room with like a blindfold on.
I feel like having someone say it like keeps your own mind from wandering.
Yeah. Like there's like a degree of like enablement that comes from that coaching. And it's similarly, like when I've done like my like polar plunges, like the ice baths and stuff.
Yeah.
I remember when I first started doing them outside of my house, like Alice had watched a bunch of videos with me on how to do it. And she would come out there and literally just be like, "Ben, breathe. You are safe. You are okay. You can do this." Like, and like all these like little like words of like encouragement kind of like kept bringing me back to like, you know, like a piece of center where it was kind of like, you're right. Like I am okay. Like I chose to do this. Like I am in a safe place. Like worst case scenario, I get out. Like, you know, everything is okay. But like it was odd because all of those things I knew to be true anyway. I was optionally doing this.
Right.
You know, like I was the one who walked outside in my bathing suit in, you know, 30 degree weather to hop into a tank of water. Like,
right.
You know, but hearing somebody say it inside of that moment of like what is otherwise overwhelming physiological panic does help you to like sort of like calm down. And when you calm down, you stop being so cold. And so anyway, like, you know, I can definitely understand a piece of how that works. So anyway, Alice goes and she makes this appointment and she goes to the experience. And I think that the takeaway was it was not super legit.
Not super legit. Oh, no.
With this particular provider. And I think that she found it to be a little bit quirky. I don't think that Alice like successfully was like taken out of her head. I don't think that the room that like went black and white, somewhere similar to what you were saying.
Okay.
However, the provider she was working with recommended this book, which is by Eckhart Tolle. And it is like, you know, I think the book is called like New Earth, A Spiritual Awakening, which, you know, it's like, that's the point of it, where it's like, I need to sort of like set you up so that as I start to like peel back the layers, it's sort of like, okay, he did say cult to lead off with. So when we hear the title of the book,
it is a very crunchy title.
It's a little bit. Yeah. Like there's a certain vibe about it. The sort of description is that you're supposed to ascend to the fifth dimension.
Oh.
However, the fifth dimension as described is almost exactly what you described.
Oh, really?
Which is like that feeling of like colors taking on like a greater degree of vibrance. I mean, it's in a lot of ways it is probably this phenomenon of living truly intentionally, purposefully inside of the moment and allowing all things to sort of like, you know, like be received for what they are, like the beauty that is everything.
Right. They've just sort of like used a bunch of I don't want to say like supernatural sounding words, but like spiritual sounding words just to like attach names to physical experiences you could have.
Yeah. And so literally the note that I have written down here myself is that like everything that I have read inside of this book does not feel like the idea of like a spiritual awakening to me. Like I would have like red flashing lights sort of going off, kind of like, I don't really know if I know what that means.
Right.
Like, cause that's not something that I personally feel attuned to. But I do think that it's like, I interpreted a lot of like what I was listening to as more like psychological. Like I feel like I could understand like what the brain is doing and everything that's going on. So there's a few different like layers to it that I found to be kind of fascinating. One of them was almost exactly like what you said. So it is that ability to see the vibrancy of the colors, to see like whatever, because one of the examples that they give, like in the opening section of it, is basically describing how millions and millions of years ago, the earth was full of, you know, not quite animal life yet, but plants, you know, and you know, the plants had not yet turned to flowering plants because flowers are innately like delicate in nature. But then at some point in time, the flower had to emerge. And the first ever flower that did emerge probably was very fleeting and did not last long because of this delicacy. But as time went on, they continued to be created and there became flowers of the world. And flowers are things that we are drawn to as beautiful. However, they are also like the representation of the first ever things that we as like humans, like intelligent species, would place value on, despite the fact that they don't provide like any specific utility.
Okay.
So like if you're to go back to like a pre-currency area, flowers could have been one of the very first things to ever be valued.
Sure.
And I think that this idea of like ascending or whatever would be the idea of like us as either as an individual or as a society blossoming, you know? So do you start to see why I started how I started?
Yeah.
I can feel your skepticism.
I know. Yes. Good.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Okay. However,
it is thick.
It is thick. Yes. So I agree. Trust me. I am with you.
Okay.
But there's something, I mean, you and I love the book, The Kingkiller Chronicles, The Name of the Wind.
Yep.
And a huge theme inside of The Name of the Wind is that basically it's like to fully and fundamentally understand something like the wind. It's like you can speak it by its truest name. It is no longer a word to you. It is something that you are familiar with. It is like a thing you have come to understand its irregular movements and behaviors and such.
Yeah.
And so I think that like this actually came out before Rothfuss wrote The Name of the Wind, the original. And so there's actually a huge, like, as I was like listening to this entire book, I was like, Rothfuss definitely read this
book,
because it seems like a lot of what it's describing is almost what you witnessed, was like the name of the color red,
right,
on that person's shirt, like the most vibrant red you've ever seen in your life.
Yeah.
And so I think that like what they're saying is like when you look at a flower, there sometimes like you almost like enter into like you awaken your sleeping mind, like they would say in Name of the Wind or whatever, but it's almost like you see its beauty for exactly what it is, and you don't think of it as a flower anymore. It's like almost becoming one with the name of flowers.
Okay.
And so you are just seeing it for the beauty that it is.
Right. Okay.
And so then it's kind of like that's the baseline example, which I understand is like medium convoluted and kind of like you said, crunchy maybe a little bit, where it's kind of like, okay. However, then I think as you take it like one step forward to like practical application, it's like what would ever cause society or individuals to have such a sort of like phenomenon, such an experience of sorts. And what's fascinating about it to me is it actually brought me back to the Carousel of Progress.
Oh, at Disney World?
At Disney World.
Yeah. Great Big Beautiful Tomorrow.
It's a Great Big Beautiful Tomorrow. Yeah. But the thing about the Carousel Progress that's always stood out to me is, in a case you've never done it before, it's this like rotating stage that Walt Disney himself had created for the New York City World's Fair, I believe in 1960 something.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And basically what it is, it has a lot of like animatronics and it's showing like the United States of America through the 1900s. And it's basically demonstrating like as the decades went on, each new piece of technology that had been delivered to the world. So things like, you know, like a refrigerator or a dishwasher, or, you know, like when you think forward into the future, like a stove that you can command to, you know, turn to 400 degrees or whatever. And it's sort of like as the stage turns each time, you know, he's kind of like, I just can't imagine how how life could get any better.
Yeah.
But as each time it turns, you start to see like, oh, like new advancements were made, which meant that other responsibilities from day-to-day life had been removed.
Right.
And in doing so, it's almost like, it's like as we're able to take the responsibilities of life and change the way that we can then interact with our world, it's almost like we can slowly pare off these simple responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
And then what's left is the ability to pursue new things that are less utility based in nature. So it's like the flower again. You know, it's like you know, by going and painting or drawing or singing or you know, engaging in some kind of art form of some kind, those are things that are not necessarily like harvesting a field or like carrying a milk jug or whatever. It's like, this is, this is taking, it's putting emphasis on creativity instead.
Okay.
And I think that in doing that, like, especially then as you think about like society and less of a dishwasher and more of like roads or bridges or buildings or like air conditioning, you know, like programs to make sure the world runs as it does. It's like, as time goes on and all of this compounds, it allows us to start to think about more creative endeavors and less necessary.
Right. Like if all of your, like most, like if everyone's needs are effectively met for most of the time.
Right.
Like then does humanity achieve like a more like Zen state or something?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And that is, that would, I mean, it's like almost like a, fits like a glove. Because I think the foundation of Zen actually came from a Buddhist monk who was giving a sermon where he walked out, and this is all in the book, but he walks out, he holds a flower and says nothing. He just stares at the flower and at, you know, there's like all these other monks who are looking on. And after like an hour of silence,
yeah,
one of the monks smiles.
Right.
And it's almost like that one singular monk is the one person who like understood the meaning of the sermon,
right,
which was just beauty.
Right.
Like, no words were required. Just, right, just appreciate it.
Just appreciation.
And that is the foundational building block for Zen as we know it.
Right.
You know,
okay,
which is fascinating. So anyway, I mean, this is just sort of, that's like the intro.
Okay. Right.
Yeah. Does that mean anything?
Is that suggesting like that's the ultimate like goal of human existence, is to just like be born and appreciate the world?
I don't know if it's the goal or if it's just sort of like what, like the next step that you could foresee taking place.
Okay.
You know, I mean, I know I always go back to that hierarchy of needs thing.
Yeah.
And I know it drives you nuts. Cause I think about it more than probably any other living human being who doesn't teach Psych 101,
right,
at a university. But, I think the fundamental basis for the hierarchy of needs, as I've probably brought up on numerous occasions, is, you know, on the most simple level, when you look at it, you've got, you know, air, food, water, shelter.
Right.
And it's like, when I tend to think about that, I tend to think anybody who is solely focused on achieving food, water, shelter. So like, imagine you're out in like a primitive environment and you're attempting to make sure that you have enough calories to make it through the next day.
Right.
Or you have like a family around you or a tribe around you. And it's like, okay, like I need to make sure that like we don't know where the next meal comes from. Food is vitally important. How much do you think that person cares about how good they are at pickleball?
Right. Yeah. Like they don't.
They don't at all.
Right.
You know, so the idea is that like if it gets to the stage where it's like, okay, those needs are met, then you're able to climb the pyramid to the next section. And the general trajectory that any individual would, the relationship they may have with the hierarchy of needs is achieving the top tier, which is what is referred to as self-actualization. That would be becoming the best version of who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Something that you're not able to achieve until all the other needs have been met. It is a very privileged place to reside.
Right.
But when you apply that analogy to society and you start to think like, okay, we have buildings, we have roads, we have automobiles. Like,
yeah,
you know, it's like we are ascending that hierarchy a little
bit. Like you're trying to take care of more and more things.
Precisely.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, if all of us as a collective reach that top tier of self-actualization, then I guess the argument would be that would be whatever. The book would argue that's what this fifth dimension is called. I would argue it would be an interesting place to live in.
Yeah.
that's when it all boils down to it. Like, I know I'm speaking very, like, you know, philosophically, very ethereal about this concept. I'm not like, you know, on a newfound mission in life to show people the light. I am just merely like hearing, interpreting, listening, and applying, because Like I myself have always
applying how
like applying to like my own thought processes as to like what like as we, you know, learn and grow, like what we can value, you know, because I do think somebody like I almost have like one hand tightly wrapped around like utility based things, like things that are highly functional and purposeful. Mm-hmm. And I think that like embracing like arts is something that like I have like more struggled to do. Like okay. I like even like what we do here at Super Carlin Brothers, like I don't tend to see as like necessarily like an art form that I feel like I am continuously expanding.
Right.
It's it, but like it would be interesting to see it that way.
Yeah.
You know, to be like, oh, what would it look like to modify my art form,
right?
You know, to take it and interpret it that way, and then attempt to share that with the world.
Okay,
so all
right,
that's the thought.
That's your thought. Okay, so this is basically just something like rolling around in your brain for
yes.
a while.
Yes, yeah. Okay. Well, we went on a long drive to New York, and Alice and I listened to like 4 or 5 hours of this book, and it's remarkably dense in nature. And the number of times that we just had to like pause it and be like, okay, what does that mean? But anyway, that's where I'm at.
All right.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, thank you for sharing.
Thanks. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you feel self-actualized?
No, not yet. I mean,
not
it's,
yet.
It's a journey.
The real irony will be when you're like 70 and you're like, I think I got there when I was like 30.
Yeah. You know? I know.
And this
yeah.
whole time you've just been like, the only thing you haven't realized is that.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. That'd be so interesting. Yeah. It's yeah. To follow up on your point, basically like, yeah, do you think there's a world where you get to age 70 and you're like, wow, 30-year-old me basically just had it figured out?
I mean, I'm curious what you think is stopping you from being at the top of your pyramid here.
Well, I know. And I mean, it's very interesting. Like, because Alice sent me another thing. Let me see if I can find it really quick as I'm talking about it here. Because like it is probably like one of those things that like actualization feels very vague. It feels very wimbly wombly.
It does.
In terms of like what that would actually mean.
Right.
And I think that there's a chance that like you are someone who I do genuinely believe like lives in such a way that I think is unique. Like I feel like you have always done a really phenomenal job of like living like very like content. Like you're very like centered on like who you are, and
like living very true to myself.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Which I think is amazing. Like it makes you like a great person. It's, I think I sometimes think it's like, it could be rarer than maybe you realize, because you're like, well, this is my normal. So surely it's everybody's normal. And it's like, I think it's not.
Right.
Which could
well,
be,
thank you.
You're welcome. Yes. Yes. Yeah. But so this was kind of interesting. So, you know, Alice is going to do this thing, and she has this like stages of spiritual awakening again.
Oh,
to,
boy. Okay.
To go back to this,
yep,
but
let's hear it.
The thing that she thought was very interesting is she was like, I wonder if you're like you on your own with no guidance from anybody is just kind of doing this based on like what this wheel would dictate the stages are.
Okay, what are the stages of spiritual awakening?
I know, yes. Which again, like, you know, I'm more of a psychology person than a spiritual person, just
yeah.
You know, that's usually where I'm coming from, if that helps clarify any of this. But okay, stage one, dark night of the soul. Feelings,
oh boy.
Feelings of loss, hopelessness, or confusion. Stage two is disillusionment. Complacency with life is replaced by dissatisfaction with how things are. Stage three is seeking deeper meanings and experiencing breakthroughs. Stage four is inner work, which is mindfulness, shadow work, inner child work, and deep introspection, which is what I think I've been doing for the past few years of my life. And then stage five is, it says connection with the divine, deep alignment with life, community, and inspiration. And so to me, what this means more than anything is like, because again, like I don't have a specific relationship with the divine. However, I do think that I'm someone who, like, I'm a watcher of people. Like, I think that I can tend to understand people's like motivations. And like, I think that, like, you know, like when I'm listening to people talk, I'm trying to figure out like every layer of what is causing them to say the things that they are saying. Mm-hmm. It's like, what is informing all of their thoughts, feelings, and concerns? And like, is it something that is like actively holding them back from progressing forward in life and these types of things? And I think I'm actually reasonably good at assessing this in other people, but I'm really, really bad at assessing it inside of myself. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think I'm very good at identifying like my own passions or like the things that like light a fire underneath me or make me very excited or driven or whatever, and then making sure that I'm consistently keeping those things close to me.
Okay.
You know, so like I think sometimes I accident my way into them. So like, you know, we certainly talked about like rock climbing a lot in the past, where it's like, I think that was one where it was like, I found it, and I do think that I was like closer to a sense of like, you know, oneness, where I felt very like in rhythm with myself. I think I felt very confident. I knew how to make myself like happy. I was very motivated by the activity that I was doing. It was kind of driving me in this like very like upward trajectory type of thing, way. But then it was also like at some point in time, like the sun almost seemed to like set on that activity, that aspect, that like, and it was almost like it ceased to be able to provide me with what it once did. But during the period of time that I was inside of it, I was like, oh, this is amazing.
Why do you think it set?
I don't know. I've always wondered if it was like a performance plateau, like where I found something that for years, every single time I went and touched the wall, I was better than the time I was before. Mm-hmm. So there was nothing more fun than just going up.
Right.
You know, because it was like each day it was like, I couldn't do this yesterday. I can't today. You know, and it was like, even with like other fitness endeavors and stuff like that, like it never really felt to me like with, you know, running or biking or any of the other sports, soccer, you know, that I've ever done in my life, where it was kind of like, yeah, I've been training hard and I can tell, and like, I'm getting better. I'm getting faster. I can kick the ball harder. I can pass the ball more accurately. Like, right. You know, it never translated to that to me. It was like, you go to practice and...
Yeah, I feel like I know what you mean, because like so often it's like when... Like I think about like when I started doing like basketball and soccer, like as a kid, it was like, was the goal in doing that to like become really good? Like I'm trying to think, like, you know, for the most part, it was like I would sign up every year because it was fun to play, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
You know, I would go to practice because that was part of being on the team, but I wasn't ever at practice like, let me really focus in on getting better at layups. Let me really focus on like this, like passing, or let me really focus on this. Like, you know, there was a period between like, 7th and 8th grade, like when we were moving, when I was like really determined to get like a lot better at basketball.
Yep.
And there was like during that period, like I was really determined in that one regard. It wasn't just like, oh yeah, basketball is a fun thing I like doing. It was like, I want to be better. And it was really an outlet for me.
Sure.
More than anything. But like, I got a lot better.
Yes.
Like it was like noticeable, and it was like, but it was like the kind of like determination that I had not really put towards many things before then. And even like, even when I think about like cross country and stuff, like we did it for 4 years, and it was like, it would like define, like I felt like I like defined myself as like a runner, you know?
Yeah.
Like if you were to ask me like, what do you do? Or like, I'm a runner. That was like my being. But at the same rate, it wasn't like I was going to practice with like I need to get my times down mentality. It was like, I'm a runner in the sense that I am on this team, and going to practice is a part of being on the team. And practice is hard and it's uncomfortable, and races are hard and uncomfortable, but like, maybe I'll just be faster this time. You know,
yes.
it wasn't like I've got a plan. This is how it's going to look, and that's going to translate into these results. You know, it was like, it often felt like our coaches had that plan, but they wouldn't tell you how it was supposed to work. They were just hoping you would like accident upon it on race day.
Yeah. I agree with that assessment. Yeah. And you're right though. Like, cause I mean, there were people on our team. Like I went to, you know, like I was growing up with a guy who ended up doing some running for like Team USA in some capacity.
Yeah.
Who was in my grade. But like, I remember he'd be like the kind of guy, like we would go to practice Monday through Friday, and like, you know, you have a meet on a Saturday or whatever. But like, if we didn't have a meet on Saturday, he was like going somewhere to go run somewhere specific, to enact a specific kind of like training, to go and talk to somebody who could like advance his like sport. And I was like, Tim, what are you doing, man? Like going and like using your Saturday to like do more practice. We just had five in a row. Like,
right.
You know, it's like, you know, it's like he was like, you know, Sunday was like his rest day because he had to.
Right.
You know, it was like you needed to like take one day off to like let your legs like recover. But it's like clear to me that there was a very obvious like zest, desire, like I am going because I need to be going versus like more like half the time it was raining really hard at, you know, during eighth period, I was like, maybe practice will be canceled today.
Right. Right.
You know, and I'll get out of running 10 miles after work or after, you know, after this.
Right.
And most of the time that didn't happen. And I was like, oh man, it was raining so hard.
Ugh.
And right at 3:15, it stopped and now it's just humid.
Yeah. Humid.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's always how it happened.
It is always how it happened. But so anyway, I think that like, to me, I think finding like that sort of like, sense of like understanding your like sense of self in such a way and like what like kind of like makes you tick as a person is something that I think resides in all of us, you know, and it's something that I think, it's like, it does take sampling and discovery and probably, you know, like some conveniently placed people along the way to encourage you, like yourself, you know, I mean, like you and Beth must have asked me to go rock climbing 20 times before I finally was like, okay, I'll come.
Right.
Like, you know, like, sure, I'll be there, you know? And then I got there and I was like, this is awesome.
Right.
You know, but it's like, the point was that like, I mean, that was, it ended up being one of these things for me and it came with a huge amount of hesitance.
Right.
So, you know, it's funny to think like, you know, what it could be for other people where it may literally be something that you were actively saying, no, I don't want to go do that. And it's like, that might be the thing.
Oh, I know. Yes. This is why, like, often when I encounter hesitance from people in life to like try new things, I have very little time for it.
Sure. Yeah.
You just, what are you talking about? It just feels like you're being like my 6-year-old, you know?
Right.
Like, you're just saying no.
Right.
But
right.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think there's a huge sense of doubt or like a lack of inner confidence or something,
yeah,
you know, involved there that probably, you know, like could be there under, yes, the right circumstances. You
right.
know, I think sometimes it's like, even like that opportunity, like, because you want to, like, I suspect this happens, in new relationships. Sometimes like people
right.
discover this because I think when you are early on and you want to like, you know, impress or make a positive impression, or maybe even because you're more open-minded because this person you're interested in likes a thing that you've otherwise had hesitation about.
Yeah.
It cracks that door to be like, you know what? I'll try it because they're really into it.
Right.
You know, and then maybe you discover something about yourself.
Right. Then like, oh, turns out I really like it.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. And so anyway, I mean, I think, you know, it's not just hobbies though. I think it is sort of like a, you know, how you approach the various like ups and downs, ins and outs, high points, low points, in life maybe is like by best understanding who you are,
mm-hmm,
as a person. And
yeah,
then once discovering that information, attempting to seek out opportunities to fuel that.
Right.
You know, in a way that's meaningful.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Yeah. So that's the quest.
That's the quest.
That's the quest.
Which is why the beer mile is going to be so great, Ben.
Dude, I am excited about the beer mile.
The actualization.
The actualization of the beer mile. No, the beer mile is, I actually think this is a great example of one of these things that is happening where, like, it's a distance out. It's a quirky, stupid, like, ridiculous activity in terms of, like, relative, I would say, those things based on goals I've previously had. Not that I actually believe it is any of those things. It is a fun thing that we are doing.
Yeah.
And in doing this fun thing, it has motivated me to like drink tons of water.
Yeah.
Which is healthy for me. And it's like, you know, it's nice to have this like target reason why I'm doing it, because, and I say tons of water, it's like you're training for a beer mile and drinking lots of water.
Because we're practicing the drinking part.
We're practicing the drinking part, but you're obviously not going to practice the drinking part with like libations because that would be ridiculous. Because
then you'd be drunk.
Yes. So it's like, it's not like I'm just like waiting till like Friday night and be like, okay, gotta get another rep in now that it's the weekend.
Yeah.
No. So, you know, it's like we have like our little like solo cups here in office that all have our names written on them. And we've been using the same ones for weeks now. And we've got a paper towel that we're writing all of our times on. And it's hilarious.
We're tracking
and,
it.
And goofy. But yeah, then like, you know, we're going to the track and we're sprinting and it's like, you know, I'm out there and I'm like pushing myself through paces that is like very difficult.
I
and
know.
It's
like, it is so weird because like, I remember doing track workouts once upon a time and my goal in doing track workouts or when we had to do them for practice was 1000% to finish the track workout without dying.
Yes.
You know, it was not like, oh, I am doing this so I'll get faster. It's like, I'm hoping to complete it without death.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Like it is, and it's such a different mindset where like now I'm like, my goal is to get faster. Like I want to be faster as a result of this. I want to make sure I'm doing it and giving myself rest and drinking the water and stretching. And I want to be faster 10 weeks from now. You know?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, even the way you said that though, it's like, I can go back to one of the famous workouts our cross country did was 20 reps times 400 meters. So,
yes.
So 20 laps around a track. And they were all done individually with a time goal set.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, quick math will tell you that's a 5 mile high octane workout.
Yes.
Because, you know, 4 laps is 1 mile.
Yeah.
And this was like one of those things like where as the workout was unfolding, it's like in my mind, I was resenting our coaches for punishing us with this exercise, with this like routine. It's like, why are you doing this, you guys? This is so like mean, you know? And so I feel like a lot of like, you know, what they must have been receiving from me was that resentment, when otherwise they're like, dude, you joined the running team.
Right.
We are here running. Like, why are you so mad?
Right.
Like, and it's like, because you're making us run really hard. It's like, that's what running team is. It's
yeah.
Like, it's like, even you never could have explained that to me in that moment and gotten it through my head.
Right.
You know, so it's like, I feel like I remember like a kind of like animosity of like, why are you doing this to us?
I remember we'd always, for that particular workout, we would go to this like college and run on their track because it was like, you know, better for your legs and stuff. And you'd get there and you know what the workout was. And then be like, all right, let's go do like a mile warm up. And you'd be like, it honestly never felt like, let's do a mile warm up so that you're loose, so that you can like put down better times, so that you don't get injured. Like it honestly, it so often felt like, won't it be hilarious if we make them run a mile before they have to do this 5 mile workout?
Yes.
Like it always felt like you're just making it harder. Like it never like, and it's like stupid because realistically it is. That was not the purpose of it. The purpose of it is to avoid injuries and stuff like that.
And like warm up your legs.
Yes. And warm up your legs and stuff like that. But it was never, it felt like it was, that was never the feeling. The feeling was always that like, if I go run a mile before this, there's no, like it took all of the confidence out of me doing the workout.
Yes. You know? Yeah. Yeah.
I was like, there's no way I'll be able to complete it now. And then you'd finish and we're like, let's do a mile cool down. It would be like, I'm going to die. You know?
Yeah. It's like, we've already gone so hard.
Right.
No, you're right though. But then on the flip side, last week we get to the track. We're all excited about our beer mile. It's going to be so much fun. You know, me, you and Mike are out there and it's like, let's do that mile warm up. And it's like before, like when my like legs started like trotting this like 1 mile warm up lap or, you know, like whatever, I'm like, oh gosh, I don't know how I'm going to sprint today. Like my legs are so tight. You get to the end of the mile warm up and you're like, I'm loosened up.
I'm feeling a little better about this.
My heart rate's kind of like elevated, you know, like I feel like I'm ready. It's like, oh,
yes.
That's why we did that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's like, it's like, it is all a matter of perspective. So it's like, if there was a way to go back to high school, Ben, you know, to like travel back in time and find a way to convey to him that like all of this stuff is part of a winning formula, then I think that I would have even like excelled more than I did anyway.
Oh, I know. Like, I think I was talking, like Beth is training for a marathon right now and she'll come back and she'll be like, I keep like accidentally doing progression runs and she'll like show me her splits and it'll be like every single mile was faster than the last mile. And I'm like, that is amazing. This is awesome. Keep it up. Like, this is how it's supposed to go.
Right.
You know? And Like, I will remember being back there, and I'm like, why? Like, you know, like, we did all these long base runs and stuff, but, like, the way like, Beth is training is, like, you know, when she goes on her long runs, like, she is, like running slower than she even normally would on purpose, because it's like, I'm training at this particular heart rate, and the training says, like, all the research says, if you train at this heart rate, then it just gets your body to, like, raise its VO2 max so that you can go faster later on. It's just like, you know, no one would explain that to us as kids. Or maybe that's what they were trying to do, was like, yes, on the base runs, run slow. But then no one did,
you know, slow.
No one did. It always turned into these, like, giant, like, 60 minute, like, go really hard, see if you can keep up with the top group. And it's like, no, the whole top group should have been running at this, like, very slow pace. And the point was that we just did it for a long time, not that we ran fast for a long time.
Yes. Yep. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So it's that, that's what I mean, though, is like, I guess, to keep trying to, like, pull it back to this, like, center point,
yeah,
is like, Are there aspects, like, you know, this is like maybe going out more to, like, the little kernels than it even would be to, like, you as, like, you know, the co-host here, but it's like, are there things that you're actively doing in life where you're, like, fighting the grain every step of the way, where you're resisting, like, leaning into something where instead you could actively be, like, finding a way to, well, one, either identifying, this is not an activity I want to be doing. That is okay. That is a completely acceptable outcome,
right,
to this thing. It's like, do not feel like you were locked into it because you've done it before. And it's like, if you're going against the grain to do it, then don't feel like you have to do it. You're
right.
Allowed to let that go. But then in the meantime, it's also like, is there a world where you can, like, reframe it in your mind to think, like, I want to excel, and my desire to excel, like, influences my preparation for that,
right,
and therefore you've now brought, like, a much better, you know, mental perspective to the task at hand.
Yeah, I remember I went through something like this when I was working at the concert venue.
Nice,
bingo. As ever, you know, yeah. Bingo for you there. Where, like, when I got there, like, I hadn't majored in marketing or anything, so I was having to do a lot of, like, learning on the job, how to do the stuff and whatever. And it just, like, at first it felt like, you know, there was so much emphasis on, like, how can we sell more tickets? Like, what can we do? And it was like, eventually I reframed it, and it was just like, it was more like a game of how can I, like, be really productive. And so every day at work was not about selling tickets. It was about, like, completing everything on my to-do list.
Okay.
And, like, the good news was, if you completed all those things, you would complete tasks that would help sell tickets.
Right.
You know, but, like, I felt like I had a much different mindset where other people, like, would still have that, like, our goal is to really move that ticket number up. And it's like, my goal is to complete the most number of things every day.
Yes. Yes. Yep.
And, like, by the end, I was very, very good at it. I had, like, you know, like, but, like, you know, there was whenever you had new shows coming in, you could do something called, like, trade tickets, where a lot of times you would contact a radio station and you would say, like, hey, you know, we can't spend money with you, but we can give you this many tickets to, like, give out to your audience. Can you run spots for us for that or whatever?
Right. Yeah.
And,
yeah.
Like, if it was the big radio station, they would normally say, like, no, because they just want money. But if, like, a little radio station, this is, like, maybe good for listenership. Like,
yes.
Oh, if I listen to this radio station, I have better odds of winning
tickets to
whatever upcoming show is. So I had, like, a list of, like, 20 radio stations. And I remember when I got there, it was like, can you set up some trades? And it was like, this was really, like, it was a huge process.
Sure.
Doing it. But, like, by the end, I had, like, templates going. I could, like, copy and paste, boom, bam, boom, bam, boom. I had, like, charts and Excel sheets, and it was just like, bam, 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 bam. Ha, I'm so fast at this. Like, I got it all figured out. This is so good. Like, you know, yeah. And so I don't know. It was interesting, though, because, you know, we'd get, like, the tickets reports back, and it was just like, it just didn't matter. Like, I did not care about selling tickets.
Right.
Like, that, like, even though that was the goal of my job, it was like, I didn't really care. Because it never felt like the success of the show, like, made a huge impact on me personally. It was like, so show sold out. Great. You get a good job. Show sold 60%. It was like, better luck next time. But, like, my job was the same.
Right.
So just do everything you had to do.
Yes. Yep. And then see if it ends up yielding
right
in the results somewhere.
Right.
But yeah, like, I think sometimes, like, yeah, that's the other thing, is like, your primary goal usually can't be, like, being the best or winning or something. Like sometimes it's too abstract. It's like, it almost needs to be like a love, like for the love of the game.
Yeah.
You know, and I think like when that happens, the end result is winning or being the best. But it's oftentimes like that. It's not a good goal because it's not clear what it means.
Right.
You know, it's like that. That is more of like an outcome that comes as a byproduct of like lots of other work, not usually people who have like fixated on that particular outcome. So anyway, yeah, I mean, it's all just sort of like interesting, fascinating mental reframing, I guess, that it's something I think I'm always attempting to do, but then when I can find, you know, text or literature or something that like helps, you know, inform my own methodology, so I'm not just like inventing my own textbook, that is absolutely where I'm coming from. It's like, okay, I felt like a lot of thoughts that I was maybe like flirting around in my head, it's like I feel like I've almost discovered like a piece of source material that is taking a lot of the complicated thoughts and putting them into like well-crafted sentences that are easy to digest.
Yeah. Yeah. Like someone else had these thoughts and they researched it thoroughly and they put it in a book and now it is clear and concise.
Yes.
For me. Yeah.
Yes. And so it's like, that being said, it's like, I think I could recommend the book and not feel like I'm recommending a cult.
Yeah.
to bring it full circle.
There you go.
Yeah. So if you wanted to check out New Earth by Eckhart Tolle, it's spelled Tolle, but I was looking it up before we recorded because I didn't want to get it wrong. Everybody's going to be like, I think he's German. So I don't know if maybe that's like where the pronunciation key comes from there, but
okay.
Yeah, we'll be sure to link it in the show notes if you want to go and check it out.
Yeah.
I actually
want to reach the fifth dimension with Ben.
I kind of want you to read it.
You want me to read
it? I want you to read it. Cause I want to hear your feedback. I don't think that you would be thrown by it in the slightest. Like I really don't think it feels, I don't think it feels like something that you would be like, this is not for me.
Yeah.
I think you would just find it to be interesting, but it has to be done in small pieces because it is like denser than a fruitcake.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I think fruitcakes are dense.
I think so.
Famously.
Yes. Famously.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thick cake.
Yeah. Like the stuff that they have like only during like the holidays. Like,
right.
You know, like, yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like people always refer to them as like doorstops.
I know. Yeah. They are the butt of many a joke. That's for sure. It's like I will also joke about it. And I'm like, I don't think I've ever had fruitcake. Like, maybe it's really good.
I know. Yeah. It's like jokes on us. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe let us know. Have you ever had fruitcake before?
Yeah.
Anyway, guys, if you have feedback for the show, you can send it on over to popcornculturepod@gmail.com, or if you'd like to support the show, you can do so at patreon.com/popcornculture. We do very much appreciate all of your support, but otherwise, until next time,
pop pop.
Today's episode was edited by Isabel Chrisley. Vaishon Brandon does our art. Catherine Stein is our production manager, and the show is hosted by me and Jonathan Carlin.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Through the Griffin Tour is back, and this time we are heading to the West Coast. Join Jay and I as we record brand new episodes of the show live in person with you guys, plus a special in-person Jay versus Ben with questions asked by... This September, we will be heading to Seattle, Portland, Sacramento, Berkeley, San Diego, and Los Angeles. Seattle and San Diego were both sold out, but we've just added matinee shows to both locations. So if you missed out on the first pass, or if you want to join us for a doubleheader, we will have two unique shows in the same day. For us, there is nothing more fun than getting to nerd out Harry Potter style with each and every one of you. And we will also have exclusive Through the Gryffindor merch and a VIP meet and greet available for every show. We hope to see you all there. Ticket links can be found in the show notes or at supercarlinbrothers.com.